Chapter 44. On Saturday morning, Marjorie asked Ron what he was going to do about Christmas. Specifically, she wanted to know about his father. Were they going to invite him over on Christmas Eve, as the tradition had been, or was Ron going over to Harry's house to deliver his presents, like he'd done last year? "Doesn't matter," said Ron. "I haven't got any money anyway." "You'll just have to send cards and explain to people that you couldn't afford to make presents this year. Everybody knows that you're in school." "It doesn't feel like Christmas. I don't care about those things anymore." Marjorie said, "Well, that's a very nice way to feel, Ron. What should I tell the people who have already bought you things? Oh, Ronald doesn't care about Christmas anymore. So why don't you take everything back?" "I don't care what you tell anybody." Ron was now fully annoyed. "Tell them that it's hard to make presents while people are being bombed and shot daily. You take the joy out of everything, don't you?" "I don't know what you're talking about." Ron wished that she would leave him alone. He just wanted to get out the door, and it seemed like she was working her way up to giving him something to do. "Don't you even intend to send Christmas cards?" "I just told you that I don't have any money for those kinds of things, didn't I?" "It can't be too expensive to buy a box of cards and sit down and write them out with a little message for everybody." "Okay. I just don't want to do it. How's that?" Ron knew he was taunting her now. He saw her lip begin to quiver. "How did you become such a bastard?" "Oh, Christ. You never understand anything." When the doorbell rang, Marjorie said, "Do you think it would be too much trouble to ask you to answer the door?" Ron walked to the door with Chipper close behind. When he saw Hank standing there, it didn't make him happy. Chipper ran over to Hank, leaving a trail of wet spots behind him. "What are you up to?" said Ron. Hank shook his head and walked past Ron into the kitchen. "Fuck me," thought Ron. He ignored the wet spots and followed Hank. Thinking that Hank would lend support to her argument, Marjorie was happy to see him. She often found that Hank leaned toward her way of thinking when it came to Ron's behavior. "How are you, Hank?" Hank put down his head. "Not too good," he muttered. "Would you like a cup of coffee? That would be good." Hank looked strained and pale. Each gesture he made seemed to require a large effort. Finally, Ron began to warm up to the fact that something was wrong with Hank. "What's happening, man?" Hank grimaced and tried to smile, but the smile just became a larger frown. "I don't know," he said, shaking his head. Then he blurted, "I'd like to be able to stay here for a while." Ron and Marjorie exchanged a look of shock. "What happened, man?" Ron asked. "I don't know." Marjorie said, "You're always welcome to stay with us, Hank." Hank looked at her with an extreme sense of relief. He bent down and began to pet Chipper. He looked into the dog's eyes for a long time, long enough to make both of the observers uncomfortable. Marjorie served them all cups of coffee. Ron decided that he had a little time before he was supposed to go to the noontime meeting at Chris's house. On closer observation, Hank looked even worse than had first appeared. Ron wondered if he was sick or if he'd snapped and was now unbalanced somehow. "Do you feel okay, Hank?" "I don't feel much of anything." "Did someone die?" asked Marjorie. "Not exactly," she pressed. "Are you in some kind of trouble?" "I think I might be." "Did you leave Jolie?" said Ron. "She threw me out," said Hank, exhaling. Marjorie tried her best to hide her amusement at Hank's words. What did she say? She said I was a dirty little worm, said Hank. She should know about dirt, said Ron. It took Hank about 20 minutes to sketch in some of the details. He left out the parts about him quitting his job and Jolie pinning him against the refrigerator with the chair. He was too embarrassed to mention either event in front of Marjorie. By the end of the story, Hank had become impatient. Hank, he said, look, I gotta get going. We're going to Washington next week, and this is the last planning session before the trip. Hank didn't say anything. Marjorie said, why don't you take Hank to meet with your college friends? It wouldn't be a very good idea, said Ron. This isn't a social gathering. Hank wouldn't know anybody there or have any idea what we were talking about. Ron put on his shoes. I'll see you when I get back, he said, as he left Hank and Marjorie sitting in the kitchen. Ronald, wait a second. Marjorie's voice grabbed him as he was about to clear the door. She came into the hallway and whispered, what am I supposed to do with him? I've got to go to the cemetery to fix the graves with Aunt Donnie this afternoon. Just leave him in my room. I'll take care of him when I get back. When is that going to be? Probably not for quite a while. Do you think it's fair to just dump him on me like this? Ron didn't answer. He is your friend, you know. Ron knew, but he didn't know what to do. He wasn't giving up his meeting to console Hank. I'm sure that he won't be here very long, and I don't think he'll make a lot of noise or cause any trouble. You say that now, but you really won't be here long enough to know. She had an idea and was heading towards it with a gathering momentum. Why don't you give me the number at Chris's house so I can call you there if anything goes wrong? Ron flushed and froze in the instant. He can see himself sitting there trying to map out an important strategy that was beginning to believe he could change the world, and then the telephone would ring, and it would be his mother wanting to know what time he was coming home for dinner. I won't be that long. It'll be okay. I promise. Ron slipped out the door, and she followed him onto the porch. Why can't you give me Chris's number? What do you need it for? Because I want it. I can't understand why you're so afraid that I'll call you there. Is it now an embarrassment to talk to your mother? You're only using this Hank thing as an excuse to get the number so you can keep tabs on me. I don't really know the number. Then give me the address and I'll get the number from information. I don't know the address. I just know how to get there. The planning session was exciting. It reminded Ron of a marathon stickball game that went on until you couldn't see what you were doing anymore. Ron was going to Washington in the second car. He thought that everyone would be traveling on the buses, but learned that Chris was funding two cars worth of his friends out of the miscellaneous student council funds. The coolest way to travel was in privacy. The cars were equipped with a supply of pot, equal number of guys and chicks. Ron found himself unwelcomingly paired with Rhonda Beamer. She had a great body, but he never would have picked her out for himself. He wasn't really paired with her, but the other four people in the car represented two couples, and Ron felt sure he was being given a shot at Rhonda. What are you going to do now, said Chris, when the people started going home. I got a friend staying at my house who's really on a bad trip. I guess I should go back there and hang out with him for a while. Chris nodded. We're both invited over to Rhonda's house. For some reason, Ron didn't like it. Who else is going to be there? Me? You, if you want. A couple other people. Sounds like it would be great. She's got a fine ass. But I gotta do this thing at home, you know? Okay, man, said Chris. Ron found Hank camped in his room, reading his copy of The Hustler that he still kept by his bed. Hank was anxious to tell him the real story of what had happened. He went into all the details and ended by telling Ron how much better it felt not to be there anymore. "She fucked you over," said Ron. "What happened to the job with your father?" "I can't take working with him." "Do you know what set things off between you?" "I don't know," said Hank. "It seems now that anything might have set things off." "Tell me why it was so bad with your father," said Ron. "I couldn't breathe in the office they stuck me in. My sinuses got clogged, and after that, everything was just a mess." Ron thought that it sounded like a piss-poor reason for walking out on a job, but he kept it to himself. He told Hank about the planning session, but left out the Rama Beamer thing. He waited for Hank to say something when he was done talking, but Hank was quiet. Finally, Ron said, "Do you want to go down there with us? I think I can arrange things if you want to go." "I don't think so," said Hank. "Why not?" "Because those people don't really know what they're doing. There's nothing they can do that's going to change anything. And people get hurt at those things." "Yeah. What about the principals involved?" "Look," said Hank, "I think the war is bad. In fact, I think it's horrible. But there just isn't anything I can do about it." "That's wrong, Hank. There's a lot we can do to take the place of sitting around and feeling sorry for ourselves." Hank winced. Ron saw him wince and felt guilty. "People involved in the peace movement need help. And really, man, what are we doing? Nothing. What have we ever done except make up a bunch of games and develop a bunch of habits to pass the time?" "That's right," said Hank sarcastically. "Well, this isn't a fucking game. This is trying to do what's right and trying to save people's lives." "You go ahead and save them." Ron knew Hank was telling him that he was being a sucker, but he decided he didn't care as long as being a sucker was about the right things. It was better than doing nothing and just dreaming about what the things are that you might do. "I'm not trying to be an evangelist, man." "That's certainly not how it sounds," said Hank. "How did it sound when Jolie called you a dirty little worm?" At first, Hank looked stunned. Then he managed to say, "Just like that." "That's what I mean. If we get tangled up in this emotional crap, we lose sight of what's important. Then anybody can come along and turn you into a frog or worm or anything else because you're afraid to do anything about it." Hank didn't say anything. Ron wished he could tell him to go home. "Do you want to take a ride or something?" "That would be good," said Hank. Hank had Sunday dinner with Ron, Aunt Dottie, Marjorie, and George. Marjorie said that it seemed almost natural having him there and that he should make himself at home and consider himself part of the family for as long as he needed to take to straighten things out. Ron wondered if he would have to move out to get away from it. After dinner, Hank sat and talked about Jolie with everyone, except George and Chipper, who had gone to take a nap. Ron wished he could join them. Marjorie said, "It doesn't sound like the girl was for you. That's all there is to it." "That's all," said Hank pathetically. Ron wanted to kick him. He could understand why Jolie had ended up grabbing him by the throat. "Hank," began Aunt Dottie. She had listened to the story twice now and had decided she needed to take some steps to ensure against a third repetition. "If you want this girl, you'll have to go out and get a job that you'll be proud of. Either she'll wait for you to get back on your feet, or she wasn't worth having around. But no woman likes a crybaby, Hank. A woman has to feel like she can respect her husband." She paused and stared at Hank fixedly. Or boyfriend. She'll never be happy if she feels she can walk all over you. I guess you're right, said Hank. Don't say that you think I'm right when you haven't understood a word of what I've said. In Jolie's case, even if you had clouted her, you would have been better off than running away like a little puppy, which is what you did. Ron wanted to laugh but covered his mouth. Dottie wasn't finished. As things are, what have you got? You're afraid to go home because you haven't stood up to anybody. It's not my business what you do, Hank, but it seems to me there are plenty of fish in the sea. On Monday night, Marjorie asked Ron how long he thought Hank intended to stay. I don't know, said Ron. That night at dinner, she raised the question of why Hank hadn't called Jolie and told her that he wanted to make up. It doesn't feel like the right thing to do, said Hank, squirming. What are you going to do, Hank? Said Marjorie. Are you going to walk away from her like you don't care? It's not at all that I don't care. How is she supposed to know that if you don't tell her? Ron had seen the trap coming, but Hank just walked right into it. Ron felt like he'd paid a lot of twos to know that was coming. He decided not to rescue Hank from what he knew was the next step. How is she supposed to know that? Repeated Hank. Ron thought Hank looked like a holiday turkey. She's not going to know until you make the first move and call her. You can go in the other room. No one is going to bother you. You mean right now, said Hank? What are you waiting for, pressed Marjorie. She wouldn't be home now anyway. She's supposed to be at work. You'll never know unless you call. I'll bet she's at home. Hank was trapped, but to Ron's surprise, he didn't seem to mind that much. Ron decided that his mother was just pushing Hank to do something that he really wanted to do anyway. It was useless to try to resist Marjorie when things had gone this far. Hank figured that he could go to the phone, dial the number, there would be no answer. Then they could spend time talking about what he would have said, what she would have said, and Hank could feel more prepared for the time when he really did have to speak to her. With a lilting hello, Jolie picked up the phone on the second ring. Hank, who was so sure there wouldn't be any answer, that he hadn't even gone into the other room. He tried to move quickly, but got tangled up in the phone cord. Jolie said, hello, for the second time. Hank didn't answer. She said, hello again, followed it by saying, is that you, Hank? It's me, said Hank, still struggling with the phone cord, as Ron and Marjorie and Dottie watched. Then Hank told Jolie that it was a bad connection and that he would call her right back. Aunt Dottie told him that he could use the phone up in her apartment so that he could have some privacy. Hank gratefully accepted the offer and hurried up the stairs. He sat with the phone in front of him for a long few minutes, then he dialed. Jolie picked up the phone on the third ring and said, I thought you chickened out, Hank. I think that we should talk, he said, thinking that he deserved the line about being a chicken. He began to think that maybe he could go back and work for his father. We can talk, she said, then adding, but I want you to come over the next day or two and get your stuff out of here. Hank felt like she'd burned him with a match, and what came out of him next was more reaction than anything he thought about saying. But that's our apartment. It belongs to me, just as much as it belongs to you. You couldn't afford the rent, and besides, you don't have a reason to be up here anymore. What do you mean? Said Hank weakly. He was trembling. You make me feel like an awful person, Hank, and I know that I'm not that bad. I don't think you're awful at all. It doesn't matter. She paused again. Your things have to be out by Friday, because starting this weekend, somebody else is going to be staying here. Hank began to cry. The piano player, he blubbered. It's none of your business anymore, Hank. Is it the piano player, isn't it? Hank felt an adrenaline force its way through his words. No, it isn't. Hank quivered more violently. I've decided to patch things up with Tony. Hank gasped and said, You can't go back to that. Hank saw images of Tony and the stains on their rug. They were etched in his mind, superimposed on images of his mother and father. I'm tired of moving on to new things, and I know what life with Tony is like. I don't want to be scared anymore, Hank. You make me feel like an asshole. Hank was crying. I guess I'll get my things tomorrow, he choked out. I'm not going to be here, but make sure you lock the door and leave the key. Hank winced, and there was a silence. This way, I won't have to hate you anymore. After a moment, she ended the conversation with a quick goodbye. She felt very uncomfortable talking to him, and she knew that was the feeling she wanted to get away from. Hank sat in Aunt Dottie's kitchen, crying. The front of his shirt was quite wet. Sonny flew down and landed on his shoulder. Hank moved his hand back to pick up the bird, but Sonny sunk his beak into the too quickly moving finger. Hank squawked. Bird shit on his shoulder and flew back to the cage. Ron saw the bird shit and the tears on Frank's shirt and knew that it didn't look good. Marjorie was too anxious for results to notice Hank's condition. How did it go? She said. It wasn't all that hard, was it? No, it wasn't hard at all, said Hank. When Hank didn't speak for a full minute, Aunt Dottie said, She gave you the gate, didn't she? She gave me the gate, repeated Hank, nodding sadly. She probably didn't mean it, said Marjorie. Ron figured that it was time for him to step in. Hank was his friend, and he couldn't stand to watch things continue like this. What Hank needed was a couple of joints and a rod. Let's go for a ride, man. I don't think I could drive right now, said Hank. Ron offered to drive the bug. Marjorie protested silently. She thought that after all the time she'd spent with Hank, that at least she deserved to know exactly what had happened.